Greetings, dear listeners. We are back with episode 105 of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you're new here, or if it's been a while since you listened, hello and welcome. This is a leftist radical space where we talk about self-care, community care, and mutual aid in regards to really all manner of magical topics, including but not limited to herbalism, astrology, the tarot, pop culture, art and creativity, ancestral connection, and ways that we can actively and intentionally engage with global activism as well as racial, gender, and disability justice movements. I am your host, Tavi Elise, a former stand-up comedian and freelance journalist turned community folk herbalist and body worker, you know, tale as old as time, whose special interest is interviewing other genre-bending weirdos from all over. And I am so grateful to be here with you today in this moment after an unexpected summer sabbatical from this show. I have lots to catch y'all up on, and I also have like an entire bulletin board of little announcements to make. So let's get into it. Happy autumn equinox. Jeez. Blessed full moon in Aries that just happened. I hope that everyone is, you know, thriving in between eclipse seasons. How was your summer? I'll be honest in saying that mine was not amazing. Nowhere near as lit as I envisioned and hoped it would be anyway. Part of why I've been a little absent from this space is that in addition to managing my own chronic illness symptoms and care, both my partner and my mother had very sudden and intense health crises between July and September. I wrote about this a little over on Patreon, but navigating the physical and emotional realities of hospital stays and surgeries and medical traumas was a lot. And it basically zapped me of all of my energy. Thankfully, everyone is okay. Everyone is now safe and healed up and medically in the clear. But it was honestly a really scary time, and it kind of brought up to the surface a lot of inner child and shadow work stuff that I was forced to contend with in the moment. And you know, isn't that just the way that these kind of things shake up, the way that this kind of dark, deep underside work can show up in our lives? I think that sometimes it can kind of feel like, God, can I just catch a break? Isn't life, why is life kicking me when I'm down? At least for me, more accurately, sometimes it's more like life is shining a painfully bright spotlight on some of the unpleasant things that you have either ignored or been unaware of or willfully neglected and shoved into the back of your trauma closet thinking, I don't know, I'm going to deal with that someday. And suddenly that day is today. That was kind of my summer. I also got to do some nice things and go to the river and see some friends. But gosh, this year is just kind of a weird vortex. I don't know. It's hard to believe that we're already going into autumn here in the Northern Hemisphere. And when I was writing this episode, I almost wrote the last half of the year, but no, the last half of the year was a while ago. It's the last quarter of the year, y'all. It's the last few months. Shit. Honestly, I'm so excited about the guests that we have lined up for the rest of 2023. There's some incredible people who I've been playing email tag with for like months. There have been so many amazing people who have reached out, and it's been so fun and inspiring connecting with you all, despite things not going, you know, exactly as I envisioned this year. Does it ever? I just want to say how grateful I am for this space and this Rise Up Good Witch project. It has really been kind of a rock and a lifeline for me through these seasons. And I am honored and happy, and just like it brings me so much joy to be able to return back to this space. It's so comforting, and I'm enjoying it, and I hope you are too. Even though these episodes are not coming out as often as I would like, I don't know, man. Shit's weird. This is a weird world. It's a weird time. And I have some brief announcements to make before we get into this episode. The first announcement is that Rise Up Good Witch is still seeking guest submissions for both interviews and solo stories. You can read more about what we are looking for, different types of stories that we're looking for more broadly over on our Instagram, which is @_riseupgoodwitch444. But here, for listeners only for now, I have a specific call for a few types of episodes that have been turning around in my brain all year that I really want to do moving into the new year. Okay, are you ready? Coming at you. Okay, three different kinds. One, I'm really interested in speaking with working spiritual or witchy creatives who were diagnosed with ADHD and or autism later in life, in adulthood, and how that has affected your life trajectory. Okay, that's the first one. Second one is herbalists, acupuncturists, doctors, or other healthcare professionals who have experiences treating and working with long COVID patients. I want to talk to people about what has been effective, what they've noticed, what you haven't noticed, what people need moving forward. Yeah, I want to talk with people who are working in this realm right now. And third, for now, is I want to talk with Black or BIPOC midwives and doulas who are interested in sharing a solo recorded story about their journeys and their work. And this is for a touchstone story episode to learn more about what a touchstone story means. Again, go check out that Instagram post. There's more information on there. If any of these sound like you and you would like to come on the show, or if you know somebody who falls under one of these categories, send this to them. Please reach out via our guest inquiry form at my website, which is linked in the show notes, manateemedicinals.com. There's a form on there. You can fill it out. I would love to hear from you. Next announcement. Okay. If you enjoyed my absolutely riveting discussion about polyvagal herbalism with Bruna Warshaw from episode 102. Remember that? It was a gem. If you haven't, go back and give it a listen. It's a really good one. I'm so proud of that episode. I wanted to give a little follow-up shout-out about a class that Bruna mentioned in that episode, which they were writing still at that time, which is starting October 15th. It's called From the Shtetl to the Kettle, Ashkenazi Herbalism, Fall 2023. Jewish herbalists and educators Eilat Hashachar and Bruna Warshaw are collaborating to offer four classes informed by Dietra Cohen and Adam Siegel's book, Ashkenazi Herbalism, Rediscovering the Herbal Traditions of Eastern European Jews, published in 2021. I'm not involved in this. I am going to sign up. Y'all, there aren't classes like this. It's so cool. This looks like an amazing and a unique opportunity, especially for anyone like me who is looking to connect deeper with their Ashkenazi Jewish ancestors and lost or oppressed folk practices. And there are lower tiered accessible rates that are available for BIPOC or other marginalized Jews. To read more about it, sign up and check out Brunum's other offerings, go to their website, welldeepremedies.com. And I'll link that in the show notes as well. Love Brunum and their work and want to keep supporting it. On the home front here, Plant of the Month is back. Hopefully for the rest of the year, barring any more ridiculous medical emergencies, I will be teaching a class to talk all about two powerful plant allies, Devil's Club and Skullcap, two of my favorites, honestly. That's going to be online on Zoom. It will be available for everyone on Patreon who is at the Page of Wands. That's the $10 monthly level and above. Class will be held on Sunday, October 22nd at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you love this show and you want to help it and me grow, but you're not already on the Patreon, please go sign up if you're able for less than the cost of a cup of matcha or coffee. For as low as $2 a month, you can support the livelihood of this project, where we have important conversations like today's episode with drag artist and healer Rexy LaFemme. Rex reached out to me in June, and I'm so glad that they did. I'm really grateful that we met because they are such a sweet, strong, and dynamic soul who is creating powerful healing work in the world. I did want to say a couple things about this episode. First, I wanted to give the context that I asked Rex to pull some cards before our meeting started, so that we could optionally get into them if they were, you know, relevant to the conversation. So if you heard them mentioning some cards somewhat randomly in the middle of the episode and you're like, what? That's what they're referencing. Secondly, I wanted to talk about the title of this episode, Reality Testing. Now, the actual textbook definition of a reality testing, it's a psychological term. It's the psychotherapeutic function by which the objective or real world and one's relationship to it are reflected on and evaluated by the observer. This process of distinguishing the internal world of thoughts and feelings from the external world. So this is a technique that's used in psychoanalysis and like behavioral-based therapy like CBT, i.e. it was coined by Sigmund Freud. Freud is, of course, gross and problematic. Yeah, sure, but stick with me. So Rex just casually mentioned this term in reference to something like once towards the end of the episode, but as I went back and listened to this episode, I realized that reality testing is actually the through line that connects almost everything we talk about in this conversation, from the inner and outer worlds of what it means to be actors or performers, to the spiritual experience of drag or performing personas or masking, to the fact that one of the cards Rex pulled was the Magician card. And the Magician represents not only that heaven reflects earth, that our outer worlds reflect our inner worlds, but that the limitless potentialities exist if we are willing to make choices, if we are willing to acknowledge all of the elements that are before us and around us and harness them, if we are willing to use all of the tools at our disposal, powered by pure will, desire, and the inner skills which we already possess. I think that's really powerful, and I think that's the core of where we get to in this chat, that through collective action, willpower, and desire, we are capable of whatever we can imagine and divine. But to push forward, to both imagine and create new worlds together, new systems, new ways of being, we will have to push on the walls around us. We will have to push out, and we will have to test the bounds of our own reality. So stay tuned for another little special announcement hidden in the middle of this episode. But for now, thank you for sticking with me. Please enjoy our conversation with Rexy LaFemme. Rexy LaFemme is a trans, multi-gendered, multi-genre writer, visual and drag artist, performer, organizer, and healer from Jackson Heights, New York City. As a working-class, gender-abundant femme, Rexy's work is a love letter to New York City and radical communities grounded in a politics of resistance, healing, and resilience. In all of Rexy's creative forms, he explores the power of revolutionary love in the face of loveless political structures. Rexy is also a practicing witch and offers workshops and spiritual mentorship in divination, spell work, and building intuition with a focus on healing as a revolutionary practice. Rexy's book of poems and illustrations, When There Is No One and There Is Everyone, is available from Magic Helicopter Press. Let's welcome Rexy LaFemme to Rise Up Good Witch. Hi, Rexy.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much. We've been going back and forth all summer, all dang summer, trying to find time. Living on opposite coasts is sometimes challenging time-wise, but we're making it happen. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm so grateful that you're here. I just read your bio, but can you tell us a little bit about your background or kind of some of your origin story in regards to like who you are and the kind of work you're doing now?
Yeah. New York City is a big part of who I am. And my origin story, I grew up in working class Queens, in Catholic school, which kind of I feel like is a root to a lot of where my radical kind of like spiritual practice comes from or is in spite of. I'm a performer, a writer, artist. I kind of like creativity is just something that like is inherent to my life. I'm in an acting conservatory right now. I actually just finished my second week of the second year. So it's a 2-year program. And this year we're kind of like just like off to the races with, you know, doing scenes and singing and dancing. And physically I'm very tired, but emotionally and spiritually I'm feeling like just like extremely alive. Yeah.
That's great. How are you feeling? Today? Today specifically, how are you?
I'm feeling the equinox. As I was saying earlier, like, you know, fall just it's in full swing as of last night. The kind like the temperature dropped, it's windy, it's rainy, it's gray. Leaves are flying off the trees, and so I'm really feeling that kind of like move into inwardness happening and a kind of like there's like a definitely like a physical recalibration happening in relationship to that, and maybe a little bit of like summer, like grieving summer vibe, but also like excited to invite in spooky season and all that brings, the, you know, the veils thinning and yeah, feeling cozy.
Absolutely. I feel you. It's funny. I didn't even think about like, yeah, we're absolutely recording this like basically on the equinox was yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Look at us. Special. Oh, yeah. That feels like appropriate for some reason. It feels appropriate to record this in the equinox and like talking a lot about transitions and changes and going inwards and very much feeling, I kind of have this usually I have this intense summer FOMO and it kind of gets all tamped down to like the last, my birthday's in August. And so it gets all tamped down into the last month of summer. And then you feel that like anxious spiraling, like I didn't do enough. I have to make it to the river again. And I feel now I did make it to the river again. And now I'm like, oh, okay. I got that on my system. Now I'm like, oh my God, I'm so fucking ready for it to not be hot anymore.
Yeah,
I'm ready. New York summer is kind of brutal too. It can be.
Yeah. I spent most of my summer upstate this year, working at a kind of like summer stock festival. So it was slightly cool. Like I was in the woods all the time. I had access to a waterfall. So I was vibing.
That sounds so nice.
Yeah, I got back, you know, at the tail end, and it was, yeah, it was like 96, blazing, humid. The subways, you know, it's just it's not the best, but I got some beach days in for the good.
Yeah, got to make it to the water, at least
Yeah.
a little bit. Yeah, I would love to hear. Yeah, can you maybe talk a little bit about more specifics about.
Well, I kind of always I always had some sort of connection to, I feel like, other realms, other energies. And I, like, even as like a young kid, was kind of like working with spirits. It's not something that I necessarily knew that I was doing, especially like I feel like growing up under Catholicism and, you know, this very kind of like strict, restrictive like system that didn't really make sense. Like, there wasn't really a sense of like what that was for me, but I it definitely was happening, you know, through dreams and connection to my surroundings and kind of like communicating with ancestors. And I had a very strong connection to my grandmother, who I see as kind of like a soulmate and a guide, who was very Catholic, but also very, very much into the kind of like mystical, like the mysticism of Catholicism, which I feel like has a lot more, like the roots of that come from, you know, peasant pagan spiritualities that were then colonized and, you know, misappropriated. But anyway, after she died when I was 12, a friend of mine who was also 12 had this deck of angel cards, and we were just, you know, she was like, oh, let me give you a reading. And I didn't, we were close, but not that close. Like, she didn't necessarily know my connection about my connection to my grandmother, but like she, you know, the first thing that came up was like, oh, your grandmother is saying this. And I, like, my whole body turned electric. And I went out and bought those cards, and I've had that deck ever since. And that kind of like began my personal experience with like using oracles. And I also, you know, I was growing up in the, as an adolescent in the Bush years, and was had a teacher who was kind of had huge neo-Nazi vibes. And so I kind of like became highly disconnected from Catholicism and spirit, you know, religious spiritual systems, and sort of turned my back on spiritual practice in that way, but still kind of like nurtured this. I kind of like came into political community as like through that time, and then kind of shifted gears. But I feel like that's always been like there's a huge connection between those things, right? There's not really, I don't know, political practice is spiritual practice. So I think I just kind of was engaging with the material world in this way that was more directed toward, I don't know. I started, you know, and then I started doing drag and weird, just like weird performance art stuff. I took some Theater of the Oppressed workshops and did some fellowships in performance, but wound my way back to theater a couple of years ago, when I was like, I just need, I don't know how to, I mean, I know how to act, but I don't know how to act. So I feel like
Yeah.
I need, you know, I need some training. And so I'm here I am.
That's rad. Yeah, I had like a slightly similar experience in terms of just being gay, I guess. Like, are you a
Yeah.
theater kid? And slash, are you were you a gay child? Almost the same question. Yeah, I actually went to one of the remaining, there's only a handful left. I went to a performing arts high school after being my parents had put me in this college preparatory, like, high school that they went to, and I absolutely hated it and was, like, miserable, and I literally, like, wrote them a PowerPoint presentation about why they should let me audition for the School of Creative and Performing Arts. Shout out SCPA kids. And so I got to go for, 10th grade through 9th grade, 10th grade through senior year. I got to graduate from this really awesome, it was like fame. It really was. Like, there was, like, drama. I was a drama and creative writing double major. And it was a public school too, which was really rad in downtown Cincinnati. Still there. And it was interesting just being in this very conservative city, and getting to be in this sort of enclave of creative little queerdos and, like, just like weird art kids, and getting to have, I was so lucky to get to have, it was such a lifeline for me to have. And I took theater kids, I took, like, weird improv workshops. I come from kind of a theater family. Like, my dad's a musician and my mom's family is all theater people and photographers. And so, like, it was really a, even though I, like, had that creativity in my family, it was still a lifeline getting to access public programs and, like, schooling and stuff. I imagine, I don't know. I mean, I didn't grow up in New York City, but I imagine that theater is just kind of like, it's just a big vein there. There's so much of it. There's so much, it's such a part, a woven in part of, like, the structure of the city. At least it feels that way in my experiences of New York and in what the public, how the public perceives New York. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, since a lot of your work is very New York centric and New York is very important to you, I'd love to hear any perspective on that.
It's interesting because, I mean, a lot of what my work is about is kind of like political, creative, working class, queer lineages of the city, you know, of the city, how New York kind of like has this, you know, there's like this energy. There's, what am I trying to say? There's this kind of like spiritual energy of creativity and power and,
Absolutely.
It's interesting because, like, also then there's like Broadway, right? Which is this monolith. It's Broadway. There's Broadway, there's Hollywood. And, you know, it's kind of like, there's, you know, three families that own all of these theaters and like that buy up theaters and, you know, and it's this few block radius of stuff that's, you know, that speaks to the mainstream, that's also pretty inaccessible. And that also brings a lot of people to the city, and not in a way where, you know, it's not representative of the truth of what New York is, but people come for that experience and then don't also know how to, like, navigate the reality of New York and, like, what communities look like here. And then that also, I feel like, really overshadows everything else that's here. You know, like, I grew up going to so many underground, you know, like, underground punk shows and puppet show, like, weird theater, like, you know, in basements and in venues that don't exist anymore, you know, or that never really officially existed. And then there's, you know, there's La Mama, there's, like, all of these, like, really amazing, like, experimental theaters and queer theaters and collectives that are constantly being created and dismembered because of lack of access to resources and longevity and stuff like that and gentrification. But it's just like, there's this, you know, there's this, like, pulse of like, just beautiful, weird, crazy, powerful stuff happening. And I'm really grateful to have grown up here and been, and and to have access to that, because that's something definitely that saved me, especially like growing up queer and trans during, yeah, like 9/11, like post 9/11, when all eyes were on our city in a very strange way and in a very fucked up way. And that was like really alive communally too, in terms of, you know, surveillance and racial profile, like all this stuff. Like it was a nasty time. But the like resistance via creative spaces was like really beautiful and powerful and alive. And definitely I feel like saved me. And I still have that really, I also love Broadway. Like I mean, as a kid, that was my dream. I was like, I'm going to be Fanny Bryce, or, you know, and then I'm going to have a star on Hollywood Boulevard. But it's something that you know, as you grow, you contend with what the reality of these monoliths are, which are, you know, consumptive capitalists.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And what spaces do you want to, do actually, as you are now, who you are and what you are, like, what spaces do you want to be in or be a part of or be working with or be making money for? And also, what is, we'll get in more into this in a minute, but like, what is financially sustainable, or even, there's so many factors that are like different from what the fantasy is, and who do you want to be perceived by?
Right.
I feel like that's something that keeps coming up in my conversations on this show, is like, as people who are, especially as queer people who are in the performance realm, who is consuming whatever you're putting out there, and does it feel good, or like, does, yeah, all the different factors in yeah, creative performative art, performance art and acting. I feel like things are sort of being flipped on their head right now, just like socially, culturally, globally. And can only speak to my experience as an American living in America, but like, you know, what's happening. I think we did want to get into talking about the current strikes, like within these realms, the SAG and Writers Guild strikes that are happening right now. And I was going to ask you what you can kind of tell us about this, or any insight you have about this moment, energetically or astrologically, or yeah, archetypally.
Yeah, you know, in August we were talking about Pluto, and you know, I was just thinking about, you know, Pluto as this energy of uncovering. And it's like, it's an energy like that people are afraid of, like people are afraid of the underworld, but it's also like that's functioning at all times, regardless of whether or not we're looking at it. And I feel like, you know, it's not sustainable to not look at what, you know, like we have to, I think, part of the energy of Pluto and where we're at with, you know, the Pluto, our Pluto return, is that like, it's like the foundations of this country are rooted in toxicity and authority, you know, like power. It's just, it's power imbalance. That's what it is. It's working the way it wants to work, which is why it's so destructive. But also, you know, I did pull some cards earlier and I'm looking at some of them, and the Tower came up, which feels really, the Tower and the Devil are here. And I'm just thinking about, like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, that's a moment that we're in a Tower moment. And it's like, we have to kind of like, break apart. We have to start kind of like breaking apart these structures in order to actually live the way that we are meant to live, which is collectively, which is also like resourced, you know. And I think the strikes are just, it's like we're at, people are just at a breaking point, because it's like, you know, it's so vulnerable to do, to act, to write. Like it's, you know, it takes your soul, it takes your body, it takes, you know, mining your experiences, and also like witnessing others. And it's, you know, it's like the way that Hollywood works, the way that Broadway works is consumptive. It's like, you know, it's like these companies and directors and executives just like literally like feed upon people's lives, their stories, their vulnerability, and then they want to just keep doing that and doing that and doing that and not, and not
like this, not this milking machine. Exactly. Like it's so exploitative, and so many people are like harmed in so many different ways in these industries and overworked and like, I mean, beyond burnout, but just all thinking about how many people go into making a movie and the sheer amount of resources and money and like bodies that go into like making, how magic that is. You're speaking to the magic of theater and film. And within that magic, there's also this, the under, sort of the upside down of that, like the underbelly that we don't like to look at, is this, it's this, yeah, this toxic exploitative machine that it's not sustainable. And if we're not going to look at that now, like we literally have to, in order for any of it to change, that we have to figure out other ways of doing this shit and making things happen.
Yeah. We really, and I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it's a cultural thing too. I think for so long in these industries, you know, the thought was like, well, this is just how it is. And this is what, you know, if you want to do this, you have to put up with this. And, you know, it's like, it's about the economic abuse, and then also the like, the power abuse, sexual abuse, like all of that kind of stuff that's been kind of like, that was like grandfathered in, literally, you know, like that's, you know, it's like super misogynistic, whatever. But yeah, I think there's something like, when thinking about Pluto too, it's just like, there's also like a call to action and to change that, of like the energy of it, the culture of it. And it's interesting, because like I pulled this this archetype card from Kim Kranz, who did The Wild Unknown, the prayer. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the strikes as prayer. Like, what is it? It's kind of like this collective call to building something else, and that there is, you know, like a prayer. Prayer is intention. Prayer is also, you know, there's something about, there's something about like weaving hope. And I feel like that's kind of like, I don't know, that's what I'm getting with the strikes. It's like people are coming together to be like, we have to dream up something different, because it's like, that's how we have the mat. We can only have the magic if we're creating it. And so, and we need to be respected and honored for that work. Otherwise you don't get, otherwise you don't get your show. Like, why, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to see too, generationally. It's so rare for people, this sounds corny, but it's so rare for people to come together. It's so rare, I think, to see, you know, the last writer's strike was 2008, 2007, and a lot of good came out of that strike. it's like part of the reason why, you know, the sheer amount of content that's been made since then has been able to be made. But, you know, now we're at this total peak of unlivability in this society. And it's
I think what I was going to say is just, it's really cool to see like Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda out there with like, you know, with these comedians who I admire, with these people who are younger, with these Gen Z actors who are like, to see people coming across kind of across the, across all these bridges and generational gaps to be like, no, fuck this, I'm done. Like this is, and to see people openly talking about their money too. Money.
Yeah, is, that's a new thing. And it's really important, but that, I think that's part of the, like the colonizer capitalist cultural thing too, of just like, well, we don't talk about these things. So in so far as that's, you know, how we can continue to reproduce these structures that are killing everybody all the time. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I'm thinking about you know, acting performance work, it's like, it's about truth, you know, in our school and at, you know, at the Neighborhood Playhouse, we talk about you know, truth and belief and, you know, all the time. And it's just like, how do we have to also represent this truth too, or challenge some of these things that we thought to be true, that were really just things that were inherited because of these structures, you know? And it's also, I mean, I don't know, we're in such a, it's such a wild time. It's like, it really, the kind of like chaotic technology on steroids aspect of everything is really unprecedented, you know?
Yeah, it really is. There's like kind of trying to express these things to older generation and trying to express like how much we're up against just to like live, let alone to produce or like create something. And I don't know, something that my brain keeps kicking back to is just like, I think the volume of what is being made has to be less in order for it to be sustainable. And that's true across capitalism, whether that's, you know, like, why are there 15 different kinds of soy milk? You know, just like thinking about being overwhelmed, standing at the grocery store and being like, there's too much. And that's how I feel, you know, looking at, this keeps coming up in conversations with other guests too, is like, there's a musician who I'm talking with, who I'm really excited to interview next month. And we were talking about how she took her stuff off of Spotify because she really didn't like the feeling of, she was like, yeah, it was out there, but it's like, I'm not making any money and I don't like how they treat musicians and it feels fucking icky. And like thinking about the sheer amount of like, you could just press shuffle on Spotify and listen forever and ever and ever. There's so much and it's really difficult to have connected experiences, even if that's just like connecting with music by myself, listening to it. It's so difficult to feel the same way about watching a show now or listening to music now, kind of as thinking about experiences I had as a teenager or like even in my 20s. Just when art made me feel really crazy, like when it made me feel passionate, when I found something and I was like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with this. Like, wow, this musician's touring and like, I can't believe they're coming to my town, or, oh, I've got to see this play while it's still up there. It's just, this makes me sound and feel very old talking about it this way because it really wasn't that long ago, but it just feels like a different experience.
Yeah, but that's what's so crazy is that it wasn't that long ago, and yet, like, I mean, it's just the rapid rate of change. I mean, the fact that like we're, you know, up against the idea of like, we could just use AI to like steal your image and use it in perpetuity, and, you know,
cool, that sounds great.
That's even on the table. Is unbelievable. I mean, we're seeing things that, like, you know, that were in sci-fi horrors in the 50s and 60s occurring, or even 80s, you know, it's like, it's out of control. And it does make it really hard. It feels like you're kind of, it's like this void of content. I mean, it's like, that's a way with like streaming services, music and TV and film and stuff. That's also a way that they've found, you know, they found ways to maneuver not paying people on all parts of the spectrum, from like the actual, you know, musicians and performers, but then also everybody, you know, that is involved with production. And then also like you're gouging, I mean, everybody, you have to pay for 5,000 different streaming services in order to like listen to something or watch something. And it's just like,
it's grotesque. It's really wild. It's really gross. And I think like maybe part of what, I don't know, maybe this isn't that different. I mean, we grew up in the 90s and that exploitation culture is like pretty intense then too, but I'm just thinking about how intensely it feels every day waking up, like the normalization of all of this violence and exploitation is like right fucking here. Like it's like crammed down your throat and into your eyeballs, like the moment you wake up and engage with anything. I mean, thinking about this conversation on Zoom that we're having, like I had an existential crisis last month because Zoom did this thing where they were like, oh, hey, by the way, we updated our, like, no big deal, but like we updated our terms and conditions. And now we can use anything you say or do in any recording. We're going to like take that and we can feed it through AI. And
oh, my God.
And I think cool. I was like, don't make me use Google Meet, which is probably going to do the same thing. But apparently enough people complained and were like, what the fuck is wrong with you? No, enough people were like raised a, you know, rigmarole about it that they took that feature off. They're like not doing that anymore, I guess, or you can opt out of it. But like, it's just like, oh my God, it feels like it's coming from every angle, and that's, you know, that's what they want. Like the rapidness is intense because it's difficult to know how to push back against that.
Yeah. It feels impossible, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It feels like a good kind of segue into, well, anything else you want to get into about the cards you pulled in regards to all that, or but thinking about how do we harness this moment of illumination, kind of collective and individual illumination that's happening towards collective and structural change? Like, how do we, from your perspective, like how can we call some of these forces of the world around us into our practices?
Yeah. Well, I pulled the Magician, which I think, you know, and I also pulled the Ace of Swords, which, you know, for me, the Ace of Swords was like, it's like the beacon of truth. It's like our higher selves, which we have access to all the time, even though we're kind of like conditioned to be disconnected from, for a reason, because we're powerful. You know, it's that thing of like authentic, of like being authentic to ourselves and each other. And what that really looks like is I think collective intimacy. I think collective intimacy really is like how we move forward. And I think, you know, that's what always drew me to performance work and art, is like people bearing themselves and witnessing each other, and also like having these windows into what our experiences are and understanding that we aren't alone in them, and that like through that we're powerful, because there's a reason. If we weren't, they wouldn't have to fight so hard to, you know, to contain us, to exploit us, to you know, to create all of these like really insane and absurd destructive processes to, you know, try to keep us in line. And I think, you know, something that I've been talking about a lot with my friends, my community here, is that I think we have to strike everything.
Yeah.
Transportation, rent, work, literally everything, because it's like, it's unlivable. Like we're not, but they're forcing us to like hurtle into oblivion. And it's not, you know, I don't know. I think it's just, there's this, the kind of like the energy of it is just like, I don't even know. It's just, it's like, there's this like bubbling of like rage and wrath, like power, like positive rage and wrath, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like, and it's ancestral too. I feel like it's just kind of like, there's this like war cry, that we need to harness, in order to live. 'Cause I feel like, it's not fair for generations of people to be in like survival mode all the time and like traumatized, like living traumatically.
It's so unnecessary. Yeah. That's what's so painful about it. It's like we have housing, like we have empty buildings that are just sitting. And again, in this like COVID era where everything is turning on its head and all these industries are changing drastically. Every industry, I feel like, is changing drastically to whatever degree. And yeah, if not now, when? I do think it's happening. And I do think that, you know, we all feel it. We might interpret it differently, but we're all feeling the same types of energy. And seeing it play out in real time and watching people be like, I'm done with this toxic job. I'm not like, I literally do not have it in me to continue this way. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to figure it out. Or like, I'm going to switch gears. Like I just, you know, people are hitting in their own. I think the difficult part is it's not all happening at once. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's in different contexts and circumstances, and it's a privilege to be able to say like, fuck this, I'm out. Like, I'll figure it out. I think it's because we're all so wrapped up in our individual concerns, which is, you know, what capitalism funnels us and, you know, pigeonholes us into doing, is scrambling around. The crabs in a bucket metaphor isn't perfect, but it's like, it's there. Like, because we're so wrapped up in that, I think it's difficult to always be able to see or feel the bigger sort of pendulum shift, or like there's a momentum, right? Mm-hmm. And just thinking about these writers and like Actors Guild strikes, you know, that inspired this airline, and like the airline workers are, you know, striking, and other industries are like, okay, all right, like joining in. I think that we just have to keep to not lose sight, mm-hmm. or a felt sense of the momentum that is happening, because it is happening. But it will require as many of us on board as possible.
Yeah.
That's what I'm feeling. I'm thinking too about what you said about collective intimacy. What I used to feel going to theater and performance, I just think about the feeling that I used to get at the end of seeing a Black Box show, mm-hmm. and just being moved to tears, just feeling so emotional and connected in. And in performance especially, like accessing ways that we can get back to some sort of whatever that feels or looks like.
Yeah. I just last night, my support group, I have a support group because I'm going through a lot in life right now with family and New York City and everything. But my friends put together this fundraiser event for me last night, and it was a variety show, like in true fashion, and it was just, there was just like all of these like really weird queer trans performances. There was like a kind of interactive puppet thing going on, and some like horror drag and fly and poop burlesque. not like actual poop, but like the poop emoji, like a poop emoji costume. And my friend and I performed as Liza Minnelli and Elaine Stritch, and it was just like this really beautiful night of like worlds colliding, like people that I know and then like other people who like donate, like basically people like donated acts to put this show together, and it was really powerful, and like we did raise a lot of money, and also just it was like one of the most like generous crowds. Like everyone was just like like in love with everybody and cheering each other and then connecting after the show. And you know, it was really special. And then there was we did like karaoke, and so like people from the bar itself were, you know, kind of mingling, and it was like it just reminded me of like what's possible. And like when we come together, not just to make work, but like to support each other. And I felt very held, and also was really uncomfortable to receive. Mm. And I was contending with that, and like, you know, thinking about like what it is, like why does something that we have to challenge culturally too, about like why is it shameful to receive support, or like why is it shameful to need things and to need people, and how that's just like something that we were taught that's like so totally wrong. And so like, you know, like what does gratitude practice actually look like? It's not just like being like, yeah, like, you know, thank, you know, it's like there's something about really taking in what it is to give and receive. Yeah, it's just like that's something that I feel like does get lost. That experience does get lost. I don't have that experience at, you know, I didn't have that experience when I was working and watching The Music Man. You know, like I worked doing COVID safety for a while, and I got to see a lot of shows for free on Broadway, which was amazing. It was awesome that I got to see all these shows, but it's just like that's not there, you know.
Yeah.
Not there in a 1,000 seat theater with a bunch of people from, well, it doesn't matter where they're from, but like, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, in that sea of 1,000 people, there's like three little queer kids who are I hope this doesn't awaken anything in me. Like, yeah. You know, there may be some, yeah. Little, you know, there's there problems. There are individual moments that everybody is having, but
yeah,
agreed. It's not the same experience. What you said before that when we spoke that you wrote down, it's just that, you know, the radical is really taking it back to the DIY is like where we're often doing and finding some of the most radical work. And those are the things that, you know, don't have the biggest marketing or advertising budgets, or maybe, you know, they don't want more than 100 people in their black box theater, or like,
yeah.
But that's really beautiful. Congratulations on being able to have that fundraiser. Yeah. That's so cool. And so kind. I've been on the receiving end of a lot of help in the past year, and also in the past, you know, like many years of my life. And each time it's difficult and humbling to be like, like it's remarkable how difficult it still is, despite being adults and knowing mm-hmm. you know, logically, intellectually, whatever, like, it's okay to ask for help, but then the deep somatic response of like, of like, actually there's asking, and then there's like actually receiving and like creating a space to receive and like actually opening the door to the people who want to help you. And I, you know, I struggle with that part of things a lot. The asking is easier now, and the difficult part is actually being in that receiving. Is there anything that has, I don't know, helped you in terms of like practice around that?
I think like chat, like a lot of kind of like having conversations with myself, like just being like, well, your values are this, so why is it different for you? You know, like why is it different for me? Like, why would I not be allowed to receive? You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just like, I would never think about, you know, shaming a friend for needing help or asking for help, or, you know, it's just like one of my political spiritual values is community, showing up for people when they need it. Like, that's what I believe in. So why is that different? Why am I putting a different standard on myself? So a lot of kind of like reality testing, as my therapist would like to say. And I think also just like it, you know, there's like shadow work, the individual shadow work of like, well, what are the origins for me around worthiness, and taking up space and being seen? Cause that's part of it too. It's just like, not just it, you know, it was last night, it was about receiving money, and it was also about receiving praise, like for my performance. It's like, well, why can I not, I want to be, you know, it's just like, that's also, I feel like the constant, one of the constant paradoxes for the performer is like the extreme desire to be seen, and then also like the like, no, don't look at me. But yeah, so I think it's just kind of like being in constant practice of challenging beliefs and like, you know, the inner child work, talking to your inner child and like cuddling them and being like, it's okay.
Yeah, which is like, not just, you don't just do that a couple times and like you're better. It's like, oh, I'm healed now. It's like, oh, this is constant. This is an ongoing conversation with little me.
Yeah.
They require a lot more tending than I maybe thought.
Yeah.
And I think, a lot of that, you know, shadow work and inner child work can really be sort of exercised and worked out through performance.
The theater, the kind of like capital T theater, capital F film is just, you know, it's reflective of all of these binary structures, whatever. And that's all fake. It's like not real. And we get to be and do whatever we want. I don't know. You know what I mean? And I think like one of the problems that we see in these kinds of, you know, capital T, capital F theater and film industries is like the representation thing. It's just like you know, it's like only some trans people, only some Black people get to succeed. And, you know, it's like this exceptionalism thing. And it's like, it's old and it's tired and it's boring and it's just not true. And I think there's a lot, I think that's like something that's coming out through the strikes and stuff too, is like we're rethinking what that means, like who gets to take up space and whose stories get to be told and like what how we value them and stuff. And so yeah, I'm just thinking about that a lot. And this year, you know, like I kind of like wrote evaluations about my classes in the school, and I was just like, hey, like I think that there's work that could be done around gender here because this was my experience. And it wound up being a really positive, like I had a really amazing conversation with the director of the school, and I wound up having some conversations with faculty and new students and current students at orientation about gender and yeah, gender and acting and how we can support trans people at the school. And I got really good feedback about it. And, you know, and there were the incoming class this year was pretty big, like 53 students. And there are some trans and non-binary people. So I'm glad, I don't know, I'm glad that like something came out of it, of like the weird, some of the weird stuff that happened last year with people yeah. just not knowing things, you know, but like, it's you know,
just kind of a like sort of a ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, just that yeah. not having it's, like, you know, people don't have enough. The language.
Yeah.
And are like scared of like, I think there's yeah. this like fear, especially in older generations, if they care that much, you know, if the people give a shit enough to be scared of, there's a fear mm-hmm. of getting things wrong. And then yeah. there's a fumbling of like, oh God. And it's like, yo, all right, take a breath.
It's cool. Yeah.
Dial it down.
Okay.
I'm not going to destroy you and consume you whole if you like, it's not about misgendering me. Like it's about, yeah. like, it's about, you know, no big deal. It's about like breaking up your entire internal perception of like what a person, what and who a person can be. Yeah. And that, you know, that takes time for
it takes time.
And at the same time, you're paying money to like be in an environment and do this work and learn things. And it's like, if you, you know, I experienced this time and time again as like a queer person, but as a brown person in healing realms and in different realms of like, if you're one of the only ones there, there's just like this inherent load that's so heavy of having to do the handholding and like explain things to a person for the first time. That's a lot of extra labor, even if it's just a couple people who aren't getting something or who don't know something. And they're not necessarily seeing or acknowledging you like doing that labor. And you're doing that labor on top of like trying to learn something new yourself and trying to like rewire yeah. your own brain.
Yeah. And I was actually really, that's kind of a lot of what I was talking about, especially with the faculty. I was like, this is like what I kind of had to navigate. And it was a lot on top of, you know, the work of being here, which is really intense and vulnerable and
so vulnerable.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm really happy about how I think the direction that the school is going in terms of wanting to be more, it's just like, it's like institutions have a responsibility to their students and like require foundations that they don't necessarily know that they need sometimes. And I'm glad that like that in I'm at a place in my life where I was able to like communicate about that. And I was also really happy that, you know, the director was like, because I was like, I've done advocacy work for trans folks in the classroom and in the workplace in previous iterations of my life when I was in grad school and when I was in undergrad. And, you know, I do that facilitation work. And so I was like, I'm actually somebody who is very open to talking about this. Like, you can ask me questions, you can reach out to me, I can give you resources.
But also, can you take $1,000 off of my fucking
ticket? Yeah, well, they did pay me, so it was.
Oh my gosh!
But they also, you know, the director was just like, I want to make it clear that like Rex is a student, and Rex doesn't need to take on, you know, like they're like, it's important for him to be able to like be doing his work. So like, you know, yeah, I don't know. I was happy that that was, you know, very important to them to be like, don't put a lot on him, but you know, he's not like the resident, just
acknowledging it at all, just acknowledging like, hey, don't do that. Lay off, I don't know, go watch a video, there's lots of there's lots of resources available on the internet if you would like to spend an hour of your life looking this up. Google is wild.
Instagram threads, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. People don't generally seek out things outside of their own experience and perspective until they are faced with it and they're like in distress because they don't understand something or because something is foreign to them. And that's, I think that's kind of, you know, it's a shame, but also, you know, we all sort of have our we all have our like foggy areas. We all have blinders on to some things. But I'm, you know, good on you for sticking it out and for sticking with that program, because it sounds like it's doing you a lot of good and like you're finding your way within it, even though it's kind of this existent structure with issues.
It's a great and crazy place.
I'm excited to see where you wind up and who you are on the other side of it, you know, like that kind of training, it really can shift a lot of things.
It's changing. I'm transforming every day, as we all are, but it's kind of like, it feels like a powder keg sometimes.
No, I mean, acting is like, I think for people who are outside of these realms, like it, and with how mass marketed isn't the word, but just with, you know, the sheer volume of work that's out there right now, I think kind of that base level, this shit is hard and vulnerable, and it took me a lot to train and practice to like get to the point where I'm on this TV show for, you know, 15 cumulative minutes or whatever it is, or to be able to be in a play once. It's so much work and labor and vulnerability and training and pain. Like, it's very cathartic. Like, it's this whole experience. And good on you for like trying to figure that out in the current moment and committing to, it's hard to commit to anything right now, especially when there's a financial investment. So I just, you know, I just want to say that I commend you, and I think it's really rad to see you doing this work right now.
Thank you.
And to be able to blend it in with the other really cool spiritual work that you do. And on that note, we're at the end of our time here. Do you currently, like, where are you at with your current services? Are you offering any of your spiritual services while you're in school, and how can folks get connected with you if they're interested in working with you?
Yes. So I'm offering one-on-one readings, which normally for me, I do astrology readings, tarot readings, but normally a session with me is kind of like based on what a person's needs and guides are kind of coordinating for them. So it's like usually like a mixture of oracle work, energy cleansing, Reiki, who knows, like it's kind of like we'll see what happens, and we'll see what you need. And then I also do kind of like chakra cleansing, chakra work, and like longer term intuitive mentorship, where basically that's more of kind of like us working together to kind of like bring out what your intuitive gifts are and see kind of like how you can build your own kind of like practice with spiritual work. So I'm open for bookings in person in New York City and then also virtually. And you can find out more about that on my website at rexylafemme.com or on Instagram at rexylafemme. And then also I am, so as I was kind of like mentioning earlier, I'm kind of like long-term fundraising right now as I navigate caring for my mother, who is leaving kind of like an abusive housing situation and also dealing with a lot of medical and health issues. So I kind of have this long-term fundraiser that's helping support her and also support rent and like life needs as I'm in school from like 9 to 7 every day. And I've been taking donations on Venmo at Rexy LaFemme, and I think we're also setting up a GoFundMe, but you can find, you know, that's also stuff that's available, information available on my Instagram.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. And we will include all that in the show notes. Cool. And yeah, if there's a GoFundMe in the works, I'll put that in there as soon as it's ready. You can always add it. Well, thank you so much, Rex.
Yeah,
this has been wonderful.
It's been great. Again.
Really great to connect. Yeah. Again. And is there anything else you're doing that you want to promote or talk about?
I would say I'm hoping to like do a monthly variety show cabaret soon. So just keep an eye out on my social media for that if you're in New York. But yeah.
All right. Yay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we got to do this. And I'm also glad that I think it sounds like maybe things are getting a little bit easier in terms of health stuff for the people that we care about.
Yeah, it does sound that way. Yeah. We've both had just really a wild summer. So much has happened and it feels like it all got sort of crammed into the end of summer. And
yeah,
I'm hoping for ease and more/a different flow for both of us and for the collective moving into this season. I know like we're already on the verge of another eclipse season and I'm like, no. I already did that again. Yeah, hoping for more ease, flow, and fewer medical issues for everyone. Please. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to directly support the creation and production of more important conversations about tarot, art, activism, herbal medicine, wellness culture, astrology, and more, please do consider joining our Patreon, where you can sign up for a monthly contribution as low as $2 a month at patreon.com/riseupgoodwitchremix. That's remix with 2 X's. Not in a place to contribute financially? I get it. Here are some totally free ways to support the livelihood of this important project, which are just as valuable. Leave us a review. Follow us on Instagram @_riseupgoodwitch444. Share the show or link to your favorite episode on social media. Tell a friend or family member about us. Word of mouth is crucial for a scrappy DIY show like ours, and it's how a lot of people get connected in. Thanks again to everyone for all of your support, and I will see you again next time. Bye.